Good morning. This is the 20th day of May, Brass Tacks Sunday, in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. We continue our look at campaign 2018 from the viewpoint of the moderators. And we promised that one of the things we'd have a look at, constituency by constituency, what the race is like. On the line, we have Glenn Murray in studio. From my left facing, David Ellis, Peter Wickham, Corey Lane, and Sanka Price. I am Dennis Johnson. We go until 1:15. So let's thank our sponsors and then we come back to our team.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. So building supplies, big or small, and Brilliant
Metals, we have it all. And Brilliant Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Right, campaign 2018, the play of game. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Interesting conversations, manifestos launched, and anxiety. I saw one of our moderators, more than one actually, but I saw one once more being circulated on social media. I was wondering if he was going to release a poll today. But I haven't seen him armed with one, so I presume he's not. Gentlemen, one of the interesting things for me coming out of the last weekend is the comment, or are the comments by the Prime Minister on the Caribbean Court of Justice and the not going to the Privy Council as the final court. Brings to mind the fact that under the People's Revolutionary Government of Maurice Bishop, Grenada established its own final court of appeal. And as far as I recall, I think the person who was at the head of that Court of Appeal was our own Sir Frederick Smith, now deceased, who was the first Attorney General of Barbados, if I recall, which made me refer to the Prime Minister's comments about politicians in gowns or in robes. So we only have politicians in robes outside of Barbados, or do we have politicians in robes inside of Barbados? And what is the reference to politicians in robes and the administration of justice, since our judges are appointed by the politicians? My concern is, and has always been, the institutions of governance. And if you undermine the faith and confidence in your institutions, you run the risk of removing from the minds of the populace the things that are supposed to protect them from a political dictatorship whenever it happens. I am not saying it's going to happen under X party or Y party. But when you put things in place because you think those who practice it under you will do so fairly, what happens when those practicing whatever you've put in place no longer sit under you? That's my comment. The floor is yours, gentlemen. What was that comment, Glenn?
Well, why did you pick on me?
Because I heard you react. The others in here said nothing. Their heads were bowed. They are apparently not on the receiving end of that one.
Maybe because I'm not there, so I reacted. I thought the comment last night by the Prime Minister, I found it very interesting and curious, not only for the comments, but also the timing of it. To me, I thought it leaves it open to accusation that the comments are probably going to be made because of the outcome with the Cabinet Court of Justice over the,
Commonwealth citizens being able to vote.
I thought in that context, they found it a little strange and odd and curious, but the Prime Minister sometimes can be very inscrutable, so I'd leave it at that. But on that whole question, I myself have always felt that Barbados has been generous. I don't know what the other countries do in themselves, but I said that 3 years, a little much. I think that for a person to qualify to vote in Barbados, me personally, I think it should be at least 5 years and not 3.
Let me respond, and I'm getting as far away from as possible from Glenn's position on this issue, because this is not an issue about who could vote in Barbados at that. The Prime Minister has thrown this whole question of the CCJ in at this stage, and I think what it has done to me is it clearly sends a signal that he is hostile to the CCJ. I think that it is a most unfortunate position for him to be taking. You know, the idea of political judges is often used in the American context, where they say that judges engage in lawmaking. I don't know if Barbadians understand the nuanced language that is used in the United States, where they're saying that judges are being activists. So judges are trying to deal with abortion, judges are trying to deal with gay marriage and things like that. In this instance, I think what he is trying to suggest is that judges are being they're trying to make law, which is really the purview of Parliament. Now, my thing is that it's very simple. If you're uncomfortable with the idea of a Commonwealth citizen or a CARICOM citizen being able to vote after 6 months or 3 years or whatever it is, then go to Parliament and change the legislation. You were Prime Minister for 5 years. If it is that your attitude was that, don't see it as a question of attacking the judges. Go to Parliament and deal with it. And I find the Prime Minister's attitude to the CCJ is offensive. It is offensive to me as a CARICOM person. I believe it should be offensive to the justices as well. And I think that in the context of what is going on now, it is sending a signal that this gentleman believes that he can win this election by appealing to a base that is xenophobic and nationalistic. And I think it is a bad judgment on his part, because the vast majority of Barbadians that I have spoken to are not necessarily agreeing with him. You cannot win an election in Barbados with only the base of your party, whether it be BLP or DLP. And this idea of grabbing for the base and trying to incite the base by going after this nationalism, which started with the Green Paper on immigration reform, has been a consistent theme of this Democratic Labour Party administration, up to the Shanique Myrie case, up to this other case. And my thing is, like, it's almost 3 times we have gone to the court with this matter of the people. And I feel, look, just register the people. What exactly is the big issue? Because all you're doing is setting up yourself for a person to suggest that you are hostile to these individuals in a way that you really shouldn't be. Errol Barber's one of the architects of CARICOM. And here we are at the 11th hour of an election, and this is becoming an election in which you have a prime minister taking this kind of position. Now, my thing is, like, in what logic could any strategist suggest that it would be wise for you to take a position like that, saying that if you get back in, you are going to move away from the Caribbean Court of Justice and to take a hostile position at the 11th hour? How could that benefit you politically? And I am anxious to hear Glenn respond to the strategic logic of all of this. It's lost. To me, it's almost as though Democratic Labour Party has made a determination that they're not showing up for this election.
May I add my own assessment of what's taking place here? I don't believe that this is just about the decision that has recently been made in relation to Commonwealth citizens. I believe it goes back to the Shanique Myrie case and other matters, right? But in all fairness, I don't think that this is the central issue of the week. This thing has been thrown onto the table as turning this election into a referendum to some extent on the CCJ. But I think we need to look at some other things that have happened during the course of this week that, to my mind, are going to be seen as more influential in this election outcome. The more significant thing that happened in the past week had to do with the comments which were made by former Prime Minister Arthur and the response that came from Mr. Elliot Motley and his lawyer. I think that had a significant impact on this election campaign this week, because initially I thought that the comments which were made by Mr. The comments which were made by Mr. Arthur, because he was a former prime minister, carried a lot of weight. And if they were left alone, they would have been understood by most people to be true. And in those circumstances, in my judgment, it would have had a profound impact on the opposition Barbados Labour Party and its campaign. The fact that Mr. Motley went public and said it was not true and produced evidence to support his position also had a significant impact on this campaign. Because if you looked at how the Democratic Labour Party has pursued the campaign so far, it has largely been an attack on the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party, and in particular on the image of Mia Motley. So what's left to be seen here now is who's won and who's lost out of this particular maneuver. And I think that that is more germane to this campaign than any discussion about what's going to happen with the Caribbean Court of Justice. One of the big issues I would think is that how can you commit a country, a whole nation, to pulling out of an institution like this in this particular way?
At this particular time.
In an election campaign, it's not in your manifesto. It's not something that at the start of this campaign you committed the country to. But because it comes across as though just because you don't like what is happening, you don't like the decisions, it does come across as though you're then committing the country to that. But as I said, I don't think that that is as significant to this campaign as some of the other things that happened. I don't know how the other members of the panel see it. Sanko?
Thanks, David. Good morning, everybody. As you said, Arthur's comments carried a lot of weight. But what struck me from the time he began to speak is on the timeline. It didn't make sense to me.
How so?
Because everybody people who remember what happens over the years will remember the coal cola syrup issue.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next controversy that Mia Motley was involved with then was EduTech then after. So during that first period of her being a cabinet minister, it was consumed with that. It didn't, so therefore I couldn't figure out why he was saying that when my memory, I didn't even check then, my memory was saying, but that can't be correct, those dates. It didn't, and for Mr. Arthur to be saying that without checking, it's just not him. I've always seen him as a person who focuses on detail. Look how he dealt with the whole OECD threat, how he really went through it when there were other problems that we've had in Barbados. He always was the person who did all his background information. He did all his research before he spoke. And for this one, it just didn't seem right.
Well,
something seemed off here.
The night before, the Prime Minister spoke at Carlisle Car Park, and you could see that the stage was set for Mr. Arthur to enter. When the Prime Minister said, and if he is not to be stained by this, he should come out and speak. So it seemed as though there was definitely some kind of
collusion
relationship.
I call it an alley-oop.
Between
I did not want to go
these
there.
Comments.
I did not want to go there because I didn't want to say, imply, or in any other way suggest that Mr. Arthur's strings were being pulled, because I don't want to even go there.
I don't know whose strings are being pulled.
But the whole point about it is, my essential point is this. Mr. Arthur is normally the sort of person who's always prepared, and when he speaks, he has a very sharp tongue, and he's devastating normally. And in this time, he erred in fact. Okay? Because he erred with those dates, it presented a problem for me to even go on listening.
Not only dates?
No, but I'm dealing with the dates. The point about it is that those dates were too significant. I remember them as an average Joe.
I think Glenn wants
right?
to comment.
Yeah, Joe. Glenn, sorry.
No, but I might be wrong, but I think what Mr. Arthur said, right? He First of all, what Mr. Al said, he did not do it. He did not agree to any waiver. Right? Can we agree on that?
I don't know that we can. There was a waiver offered by the Ministry of Finance.
Peter, please. I mean, can I say now, Peter, that, you know, sometimes before two words can drop from my mouth, you're on to me. I just like to be able to have a very strong...
Because we only have 2 hours.
No, don't mind that, but don't rush.
So let's not waste time.
But give him a chance. Every time I say something, you always... The first person to aunt to be attacked will be, is always you. I just said that I actually...
Because, Glenn, you're easily distracted like you are now.
Please, Peter, let him speak. Don't prove him right. Let me. I'm going to shield you, Glenn.
You don't
shield
me. I'm shielding myself.
Yeah.
There's a brand show called Psychohistory, in which people use parts of the principles of psychoanalysis and psychology to try to analyze the words and utterances of behaviors of people in public life, particularly politicians. But they do this not by sitting down far. And judging people expect it. What they do there, either talk to people themselves, talk to people who are intimately related with them, who know the behavior, and then they try to come to some kind of rational conclusion. So therefore, I've never therefore been one to make my own personal prejudice bias, because everybody has their biases, opinion on these matters. All right, so let me put that out. If you want to do it, probably I say you should do it using those same powers of analysis like you do in psychohistory, which is a bona fide field of study.
Okay, so your point, though, in relation to the comments made by
Mr.
Arthur,
said that he did not authorize a waiver, right? He would like to know who did it. And basically, if it had been Miss Molly, he would have fired her. That's what I remember him saying.
He said that.
That's what I remember him saying. In summary.
Listen.
let me ask a question, though. Sorry, David. Let me ask a question. This supposedly happened in 1998?
Yes.
Right.
Starter was the prime minister until 2008. That's 10 years. Mr. Stewart was the prime minister sometime thereafter.
2010.
From 2010. So,
8 years.
For 10 years, there was this waiver that the Prime Minister Arthur did not know about, did not see the files, did not concern himself with it, did not know about. If he knew about it, somebody would have been fired. For 8 years, we had the Democratic Labour Party who didn't know about the waiver, didn't see the file. 20 years later, it suddenly turns up, and we are supposed to believe this is how structures in governance, that I keep going back to, institutions set up to protect the population from people who may use their office in various ways, goes undetected for 20 years, and then turns up in the court of public opinion. Listen, forgive me if I don't like politicians, their blind political supporters, and the nonsense that I'm supposed to
believe.
Take into my psyche and believe as fact. It does not sit with me. Sorry. I'm real, real sorry.
But I think that's a good time for me to jump in. Morning, everybody. I agree with Dennis. I don't think it holds as much weight, I'm sorry, David, as you're saying. I've been following a lot of public opinion via social media. Forgive me for that.
What aspect?
That the comments of the former prime minister carries a lot of weight. A lot of people that I've spoken to and a lot of people that I've followed, I think that they understand the script. They understand what is happening. And they've, as I think it was either Sanka or Peter that said it, in relation to, if you follow the things that happened before this, if this happened in isolation, I think it would carry a lot of weight. But if you look at the comments being made about Miss Motley from Mr. Arthur, for a while now, I think that you would understand that this is par for the course.
No, I don't. I hold to the view that without rebuttal, it would have carried weight.
It would have.
Because of the person that was making the comments. However you string those comments together, they're pointed in one direction and one direction only. And, you know, the inference was quite clear. So if they had just left that alone, then I think it would have had a significantly negative impact. I'll tell you why. there are a lot of things that can be said about Mr. Arthur, but I've never seen him step out like this. He's used the cover of Parliament and stuff like that, but he's never stepped out like this.
A lot of people see him as on a mission to destroy Miss Motley, and anything that he says, they put that in that context.
Yes, that may be so, but given this particular issue, that particular issue could not be allowed to stand out there without the facts being put. And now you've seen in all of this that Miss Motley has not commented herself. She has treated this the same way she's treated a host of other comments made by Mr. Arthur, including, I was at the news conference at the University of the West Indies years ago when he said that she was unfit for leadership. That's where I thought it really began. Mm-hmm. But it seems as though, for whatever reason, Ms. Motley's image right now seems to be able to withstand a lot of those lashes. There are times when it seems that way, but we'll wait and see ultimately in the election campaign, on voting day on Thursday. Yes, Glenn.
Yeah, David. Now, having been part of government and having a whole government file work, right, there's not one singular file that follows a topic for depending on the volume of correspondence, et cetera, files grow, you have different volume, 1, 2, 3, or 4, for example. Okay, so therefore, there's not one file that continuously comes your way that you can back up on something by deep into it.
Feeling into it. 20 years.
Okay, you understand me?
Mm-hmm.
I understand how the system works. There are files that come to you, and you deal with them.
So what does that have to do with the thrust of what was said?
It is possible. It's two things. First of all, you have to remember that not only Mr. Arthur was Prime Minister, Minister Fernandez, if he is away, there were various other people from time to time would have acted as minister. Normally somebody who is Prime Minister acts as Minister of Finance. That has to be the system, all right? If he is not there, he's away. Whoever acts in his place is Minister of Finance, acts as Minister of Finance. Other people would have acted over the time, including Ms. Molly.
Not in that period. Not in that period.
She never, the Gazette said she never acted until 2004.
Not in that period.
That's what we were talking about.
2004, the Gazette. I mean, he produced the Gazette to say that until 2004, she never acted as finance minister.
But Glenn, I want to cut to the chase.
If you follow your
logic about documentation and files, isn't it easy to pick up the file and see who gave the authorization? By looking at the file.
Sure. And he said he never did it.
Right, but we don't want to hear who didn't do it. We want to know who did it.
I know, but apart from that, though.
That is the question. Who did it? He said he never did it.
Look, let me tell you.
Tell us who did it. Tell us who did it.
In all fairness, Glenn, at the end of this process, I don't think that he came out of this looking pretty good. Looking good at all.
Mr. Arthur will, and I'm sure, is quite capable of defending himself in his own time.
Fine, but until then, we have to come to some kind of conclusion and judgment.
Sure.
So I don't think that he has come out the winner so far. Now, he may very well come further down the road and say something or do something, and I don't know if in this campaign we are likely to hear from him again on this or any other matter, but we wait and see. But to me, the more significant thing is that the Democratic Labour Party manifesto was released this week. It was launched this week. And how much discussion are we having about that manifesto? It seems as though we're discussing, this week we were occupied with other things, but the manifesto itself, which should be, a document, the promises and ideas which are articulated there should be capturing our attention, but it doesn't seem to be doing that. So am I wrong in that assessment, or am I missing something here? I mean, I'm going here online to look for the manifesto itself so that I can, you can bring it down and look through it. Has anybody been able to see it online?
It was sent to us, I think, when Sanka was on. I got a copy of it on the
Democratic Labour Party
page. I haven't checked the DLP page.
But the funny thing
it came
is,
to our WhatsApp.
On Thursday afternoon, when I left the program here and I was on my way back home in Fairfield, I got a copy of the manifesto. This is before this is
a hard copy.
The hard copy.
Right.
This is actually before the launch. The there were four people, three young women and a young man, who were going through the constituency, and they were passing them out, and I got my copy.
I'm talking about the soft copy, because I tell you honestly, this is the era in which I don't even like all this paper around me.
It's on the brass tacks WhatsApp.
So I want to see. I would like to be able to go. You remember, the Democratic Labour Party said that the incomplete manifesto was leaked the day before. That's what they said. Now, in those circumstances, I would prefer to get a soft copy from their own page, because I believe that I can trust what I'm getting from their own page. Mm-hmm. Not anything that's been circulated by anybody.
Not necessarily, because they said they have been hacked. So what are you getting there, man?
No, well, even so.
They too as well.
But even so, I would prefer
marijuana, medical marijuana will be legalized as well, small amounts. So
Peter, I remember Ronald Jones was the first person who talked about this. Sometime was either 2016 or early 2017, talked about not medical marijuana, about people getting locked up for spliff, and he wanted to look at it. Then the Attorney General, Adrian Brassett, came out and said not under his watch, because he had difficulties with it. I remember we were also at that time also hearing from the chief medical officer in Jamaica about the level of psychosis that was being caused just because of the availability of small amounts of marijuana. And more people being having access to it. That was around that talk at the same time. So I know the party takes the position that they will be doing this now, all right? To my mind, there's that level of inconsistency. And there are other inconsistencies I can point out, which I think that need to be pointed out, and we need to ask our questions. One of the major inconsistencies is Dr. David Eswick's, his view of reprofiling, okay? And then what Mr. Sinclair said as well. So I think these are the types of things that we, if I may suggest, that we could be looking at with what they're coming with, you know, vis-a-vis everything else that's going on.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you, but I want to stick my head out and say that in terms of the DLP campaigns that I have seen, this one does not stand out in my mind as one of the better managed campaigns, because I am waiting to see the DLP show up for this election. And I'm saying to myself that as we enter the final week, I'm beginning to think that they seem to know something that I don't know. They seem to have a strategy that's going to come out of the hat. In the same way that the big reveal in terms of the date, you know, there was something big that's going to happen that is going to deliver this election. Because I'm just trying to understand how all of the mistakes that you're talking about, Sanka, the question of the manifesto not being available, the way that it has been prosecuted, it is something that, from a strategic percentage, I'm just trying to understand where this is going and when the DLP will show up. When I listened to the manifesto launch for the Democratic Labour Party, when the Prime Minister's entire speech, and that was one of the few ones I listened from beginning to end, was about Elliot Motley and Mia Motley. He doesn't deal with any of the initiatives in the manifesto at all at his own launch. When I see this thing with the CCJ, you know, the day before, the week of the election, you're going to make a big announcement like that can be so divisive. My question is, where is the strategic logic behind this? And I'm struggling in terms of understanding, you really want to win this election, you know, how exactly are you going to prosecute the issues? And maybe there's something that I don't know, maybe Glenn might know, that can help me understand, you know, where the strategic advantage will come.
There you go again, Peter.
But Glenn, maybe he's saying this because you have a lot of experience over the years of dealing with elections.
I've only done five elections. You've done 20.
Sanka, give me a break. Sanka, give me a break. All I'm asking for is to be treated with the same level of professional courtesy as I treat other people. That's all. That's all I'm asking for. These remarks, as the board, you know, all behind the remarks, dropping remarks. That's how you treat that kind of those inputs from Mr. Wicker. And I think I deplore it. I think it's very highly reprehensible and invidious. Apart from you talk about the DLP's manifesto should be given more scrutiny and attention. I agree with that, because, like I said, very early in our discussions, campaigns take on a life of their own. They do not follow the official script of any party. There are things that come out of the blue, or as Americans say, come out of left field. Things that somebody said or did, like the way Ms. Motley's name was treated at the launch of their at Waterford, their first meeting. That meeting never benefited. That meeting only the outcome was that the public was focused on how Ms. Motley and other female names were treated by the speakers at the episode. They did not focus on the other part of the presentation of it was the beginning of the analysis of Ms. Motley's performance in the affairs ministry. People went on the personal attack, the looks and that and size, et cetera, et cetera. So here we go again. Other things have intervened in the process that logically and structurally, I agree with Dave, that this is where we should be at now on the manifesto, or the manifesto of itself.
One comment that has come up here is, this person says that they know that on election day you can't wear party colors, but apparently all the colors are taken: red, white, yellow, orange, green, black, white, purple.
White is taken too by who?
I'm not so sure. They've got white, so many parties. Maybe
white is BIM, Barbados Integrity Movement.
This person
is white.
Says here, maybe naked would be my choice.
Yeah, that's what scholar said in that calypso in Grenada. Yeah, walking naked, because that's the only way I won't.
Or we're all or none.
So what colors can you actually
pink.
Wear?
Pink.
Pink.
You can wear pink.
But then, shoot.
You can wear pink.
But that's another choice.
Pink is the feminist color.
That's another choice.
You have a feminist party?
No, but it means that I have a partiality to feminism.
But you also had David tell you that's another choice.
So you wear pink.
I wear pink.
That's an indication that you support him.
What, a red washed out?
But somebody sort of
cleared
that up.
Color.
David, someone sort of cleared that up by saying that once there's not, if they don't have anything on the clothing that is supporting a party, it is supposed to be okay. So I think we should seek some clarity on that.
I don't know. The Electoral and Boundaries Commission perhaps should speak to that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what to wear, because I'm going to vote real early.
Wear what you're wearing right now, David. I don't think that's anybody's color.
Work, yeah, that's
just take the red off. Just take the red off, the red accent off the collar.
No,
your
this
collar.
Is this is to gain entry into the company.
No, your collar.
How many color?
Yeah, there's a red on your collar.
Well, I don't see.
And a red M on your chest,
on
which
his heart.
Stands for.
On his heart. He got red on his heart.
My shirt.
Well, you must tell the public that most of what I'm wearing is green and white, though.
Green? It looks gray from here, but okay.
Well, like, so it's gray or green.
All right. This is Brass Tack Sunday. Good morning, you're on the air. Hello. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the first caller. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hello. Okay, let's try this again. Brass Tack, good morning. I guess we're waiting too long. Brass Tack, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I wanted to make a comment with respect to what Peter said about the Prime Minister's pronouncements on the CCJ. I thought Peter's argument, as usual, very biased and unfounded when it comes to Prime Minister Stewart. I, as a Barbadian, a long time wondered why we were a part of the CCJ. After the Shanique Murray's case and the behavior of the person in charge, I thought we should have left a long time. Having had this case now being rushed just before our election, to have any and everybody decide who will rule us in the next 5 years, I thought it was the most prudent thing that he would have said. Peter has his opinion. He must know that we as Barbadians, we are not stupid, and we have our opinion as well. Peter continues to foster his behavior on the people of Barbados every election because he's angry with Prime Minister Frendel Stewart. I want to tell Peter this personally. I'd rather have bad times with Frendel Stewart than good times.
All right, okay.
Ma'am, I just want to point out something to you, that our court in Barbados, our Chief Justice in Barbados, who as far as I know is a Barbadian, said the same thing the CCJ said.